Welcome, welcome. You're actually here for confirmation. Did you know that? It's a trick. No tests. The age of memorization and tests has come and gone. Welcome to confirmation. Part of what we do during our confirmation is we have a series called Faith Stories, in which we invite people to come and talk about their lives, talk about their journeys, and to look back and kind of talk about where they have seen God at work in their lives. So this is the second such evening in our series of faith stories, and so our confirmands are generally here. If you're in the confirmation class every Tuesday night, would you raise your hand? Oh, and where are the rest of you? Oh, we confirmed them. We confirmed them. Oh yeah, they're done. I'll get on them for not being here. They should be here. So thanks for being here, and thanks for being faithful. What we're hoping is that we each gain courage to tell our own story and to have the courage to look back in our own life and see the ways that God has been at work. And to that end, it's my honor and privilege to welcome my friend Elsa Svensson to be with us tonight. She has a remarkable story. She's a model of someone who's living their life well, living their life with good humor, living their life with great love and joy and openness. And so it's my pleasure to have you here speaking. I don't want to say too much about your life story because I know that you are full of wisdom and words and you will do a just fine job. But I do think I want to move your stuff more to the center because look at all these people. It's fantastic. So if you wouldn't mind, please help me welcome Elsa. And as she makes her way over here, I ask you all to join me in a word of prayer. God, thank you for the gift of life, and in particular, thank you for the gift of our life together. We pray that the words of Elsa's mouth and the meditation of her heart would be to your glory, and that we would be able to see you at work in her life and learn to speak of you at work in our own lives. So bless her and bless this evening in the name of your Son, Jesus, our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Ready?
Yes.
Fantastic. So if you need anything, just like right now, Pastor Phil and I are your slaves.
Thank you very much.
If you need anything, just holler and we'll make it happen.
So, first of all, I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. It's very kind of you. And as you know, I was born in Denmark into a farm community. The focus of this farm community was the church. It was built in the 1700s, and the baptism font was from the 1500s. People took great pride in the community, the church. And with the church, there was the cemetery, which people took a great pride in, that all the graves should look beautiful on a Sunday morning. In the summertime, people put flowers on all the graves. And when people came out of church, those days, people did not talk inside the church. But outside the church, you visit, and that's how people got to know each other. In the community was order. Everything was well looked after, and people took a pride in their houses and their farms. There was farmers there. There was fishermen, and there was a brick factory down by the ocean. I came from a very loving home. My mother and dad was very kind people. My mother was a nurse, and my father was a farmer and a fisherman. We lived on a bigger farm, and at that farm, there was an accident, And my father lost his sight, so my father was blind. So now we lived on a small farm, and my father was a very wise man, and he was very, very good at mathematics and geography. And so he would help us kids with our homework. And Mom was a loving, kind person. And there was fun in our home. Father could play that old piano and get us to sing, and it was wonderful to be there. When I was 7 years old, I started grade one. And at that time, in all Danish school, there was a story told. It was about a story was written by a Danish poet with the name Christian Winter in 1870. And it was about this young boy, Peter. He was 7 years old. And he had a terrible day at school. And so he decided he was going to run away from home. And so he didn't want to go alone, but he talked his little brother into coming along with him. This is the book. It's called The Flight to America. So he tells his little brother about this fantastic place. They had just everything. I was 7 years old, and I knew that there was no place in the world that you walk in chocolate muffins and it rains with lemonade. But I went home to my mother and I said to her, "Mom, someday I am going to see America." And Mom said, "Wouldn't that be wonderful? You'll see so many beautiful places." In the 1930s, people had a terrible time with just having enough food. All Denmark had a lot of food, but you couldn't buy it because there was no credits. And so, of course, the whole, well, all Scandinavia was Lutherans. And all Lutherans had lots of children. 18 children. Well, I was number 10 in a family of 11. And so the children, of course, have their food. So after school, they worked on farms and got their meal for their work. And all summer, they worked all day. Those children worked hard. I know, because I was one of those children. I was 8 years old when I first started. But it was the way of life. You had to eat, and this, you got your food. So you had to be grateful. I never heard anybody complain that he had to work for it. The 9th of April, 1940, I was home from school with pneumonia, which I had three times. And my mother came in the morning and she said, "Oh, yes, I've got good news. There's a new medication come out, penicillin. And I got the medication. So I have a couple of calls to make. And when I come home, you get dressed and come up. And you'll feel so much better in a few days." I must have gone to sleep. And I woke up with somebody knocking on my window. And I heard my father call out, "Elsie, can you come out here? get dressed and come out here. I need your help. I looked out of the window. It was just the air was just full of airplanes, and they were throwing out some white paper. So my dad said, can you tell me what color are those planes? I said, Dad, they are dark green. There's no red, white, and blue on those planes? No. There's some white on the plane. I can feel some paper, he said, can you read it for me? So I read what was on the paper. It said, if you resist, you would be attacked. The Deutsches Wehrmacht. That's it. Germany had overtaken Denmark. We have lost all freedom. At that moment, I was so full of fear, and I shook quite a bit. I took my father's hand. I said to him, when they come here, will they kill us? And my father said, no, they are not going to kill us because they need us. What do they need us for? Well, all this coastline they will have to protect against the English. And they also need our food. When the German soldier came to Copenhagen, they went to Amalienborg Palace, where King Christian and Queen Alexandrine lived. They shot the guards, took the Danish flag down from the palace, and told King Christian, the first one that take down, that put up the Danish flag will be shot. King Christian said, then you'll have to shoot me because I am the one that will take, that will put the Danish flag back up. The Danish flag was always raised in the morning at sunrise and taken down at sundown. They never hang up at night. By nightfall, in our community, soldiers came, and we lost the beautiful view we had over the ocean. And we had guards outside our home. And in a couple of days, well, us children were frightened, and we all slept in one bedroom that few nights to come with our mother and dad. The community changed very rapidly. In a couple of days, they picked a farmer's field, and they start to build their headquarters and the barracks. And within 4 months, they had it all finished with a break from that was made in our community. And then they start to build bunkers all over the coast on the north, out to the North Sea. For a while, they said to the Danish fishermen they could go out fishing. But that didn't last very long because the Danish fishermen sailed off to England. So they put mines all along. No one could come in or go out. when they give the orders, I should say that a week after the occupation, the Crown Prince Frederick and his wife, Princess Ingrid, had their firstborn, Princess Margarete, who is the Queen of Denmark now. That day, all the flags all over Denmark went to the top of the flagpole. The oldest flag in the world, the Danish flag, stayed. When orders was given to King Christian that all Jews should wear armbands, King Christian said, then we all wear them. And he asked the Danish people to help save the Jews, to hide them till it was possible to the fishermen to take them over the water to Sweden. If Sweden was neutral, if there wasn't for Sweden, thousands of people would have died. But they opened up and let them come in. There was not one Jew in Denmark that lost his life or was sent to concentration camp. I'm very proud to say that. War went on, and when I was confirmed, my sister Ellen, that was a year and a half older than me, we went to Copenhagen. My two older sisters there, they helped us to go to trade school. That took 3 years. The streets was dangerous. And it was dark. There was no light anywhere. But we had that little hope. We saw the light in Sweden. The resistance people got stronger. They blew up railroad tracks, so now food would go to Germany. And Germany fought back. They took the Danish police off the street and sent them to concentration camp. So there was no police. So it went. The most frightened ones of the German soldiers was the one in the black uniform. The SS. If they caught the resistance people, they would pull off their nails, forget them to talk, where they got the ammunition from and things like that. Life was dangerous. Then came the 5th of May, 1945. 8 o'clock in the morning, all the church bell all over Denmark rang. War was over. Peace and freedom. What a most gracious gift. There is no winners in war, because the price is too high. When General Eisenhower, Field Marshal Montgomery, and Winston Churchill drove into Copenhagen with all the American soldiers and the British soldiers behind them, they got many flowers. At the same time of the war was over and the celebration. There was also sadness. Thousand upon thousand of young men and women give their life for our freedom. We will remember. Scandinavia opened up their doors for the young people. Europe was in ruins. There was no place to go. You had a chance to work either on Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. My sister Ellen went to Sweden, and she stayed there for 1 year. I went to Norway and worked there for 3 years, saw that beautiful country, and got lifelong friends. Went back to Denmark, where I got a very good job. And my sister Ellen went to Canada as an immigrant just for 1 year and came back to Denmark. And with the help of the family, she bought a beautiful house. And life was good. I had friends at church. Ellen was a Sunday school teacher. And she was a hairdresser, and I was a ladies' tailor. On the war, I do want to mention that churches was full of people. The church we belong to, Our Lady's Church, took 1,100 people. And if you were not there 9:30 in the morning on a Sunday, you would have to stand up. People knew they needed God. And like the old man at our church, they ring the bell. The bells in church is usually ringing to ring up the sun and ring down the sun. He would say, I keep on doing this. The church is still standing. Yes. Even when spires are falling, God's word is still there. I'm always with you. It was one evening when my sister and I were sitting and talking. She suddenly said, do you ever think about the time you came home to mother and said, someday you will see America? I said, yes, that silly little story, I remembered. Well, I said, you know, under the war, English was not taught, was not allowed to taught or spoken, or wear the English collar. So my generation was not good on English, but Ellen spoke English. So she said, don't you want to see America? I said, I don't think about it. I have a good life here, good work, friends at church and friends at work. And we can go home every year and see our parents at summertime and Christmas time. No, I'm not interested in going to America. And I can't speak the language. A week or so later, Ellen said, you know what? I look into it. And you can't get into United States. Denmark have no quota there. But you can go into Canada, and from there you could get to the States. You have a chance to see America. I said I couldn't afford to go to America. So it went a couple of weeks, and Ellen said, you know what? I am going to sell my beauty parlor, and I am going to give you the ticket to Canada. He said on the Canadian embassy that Victoria, British Columbia, would be a very good place for us to go for what kind, the kind of work we were doing. And on the 29th of April, 1954, Ellen and I stood on that beautiful Norwegian boat, Oslofjord, waving to our family. One thing every immigrant have to do is to say, if they have parents, heartbreaking to say goodbye to your parents. My mother's tears and my father stood there with the Danish flag, like he was saying, don't forget where you come from. Of course, it was most fantastic to be on this beautiful boat. I still have the menu and my ticket and my passport. And in that passport, it said, you are only allowed to take $100 Canadian with you. Not a good idea. And on the boat, we got to sit and have beautiful meals with beautiful tables, and everybody was so excited about going to Canada. What would their life be there? There were 456 passengers on that boat, and a crew. There was a Lutheran pastor, a doctor, and a nurse. 4 days into our travel, we ran into a terrible, terrible storm. And Oslofjord did not lay good in the water. It seemed to be rolling all the time. Waves was very high. No meals could be served because they couldn't have plates on the tables. It just fell off. And most of the passenger was seasick. I was not seasick, but Ellen was, and the three other in the cabin. The Lutheran pastor would come on the high, on the loudspeaker, and said to pray for that we would see land, because it was a very bad storm. We got into Halifax on the 6th of May with the Norwegian flag on half mast. The nurse got pneumonia on the way and had passed away. And there was mostly Norwegian and Danes on the boat, and a few Swedes, and one young man from Finland. And he was taken off the boat on stretcher. And he announced if there was anyone that could speak Finnish, we'd come and help. No one could. I realized then how difficult it was that I could not speak English. We traveled to Montreal with a Norwegian fellow, Einar Hartvigsen, and we had met on the boat. They were going on another train. They were going CNR, and we were going CPR to Toronto. And Einar said, if you ever come to Calgary, my brother is the president of the Norwegian club Sons of Norway. If you go there, then you maybe we can hear how we make out while we are not going to Calgary. So we got on the train and went to Toronto, where Ellen saw friends that she had worked with there when she was in Toronto. And then we started out on the most beautiful train ride across Canada. When we got on the train, Ellen said to me, "From now on, we speak English. There are three words you will never forget. Excuse me, thank you, and please." I could say thank you and excuse me. I just could not form the word please. It came out please at all times. So on the train, the conductor said to us that it would be cheaper when we stopped off in bigger places to go in there and buy coffee and a sandwich. It was too expensive to eat on the train. But we did splurge, and we did have a bunk bed because we want to see as much as we could of Canada during the day. And what a beautiful sight it was. Ontario with its lakes and its forest and the prairies with those huge fields so far as your eyes will take you. Oh, how beautiful it was. We came to Calgary on my 26th birthday. And we went off the train and looked around. We had an hour there. And then we came to Banff, and we had time there too. What a beautiful sight. And then, of course, into British Columbia, out to Vancouver. And there in Vancouver, we then took the ferry over to Vancouver Island, sailed into those beautiful islands. We came into that time, the ferry sailed right in to the harbor of Victoria. There was that beautiful Empress Hotel, the Parliament with Queen Elizabeth's statue, beautiful flower pots hanging from light posts. And on a little hill right down by the water, it said, in flowers, "Welcome to Victoria." Oh, what a joy to be able to come here and live in this beautiful place, Victoria. We got a taxi. Ellen talked to a taxi guy and asked him if there was a reasonable place we could go to. He asked where we came from. And he took us to Hotel Douglas on Douglas Street. And there we got a paper and looked into finding a place where we could live. There was a place on Burdett Street, which was close to downtown. There was an elderly couple, the McPhersons. They didn't have very much, but they rented out their front room, and we shared their bathroom with them. They were kind people and let us have the newspaper. So then we start to look for the job. The first week, well, there was no job mentioned in the paper. Second week went by, no jobs. So we went to unemployment. And he said the best way was probably to go into places where and ask for a job. So we did that. We went into stores, beauty parlors. We went into hotels. We went into hospitals, even to private home. We would do any kind of work. We were now running short of food. There you could buy 6 cans of pork and beans for $1. And the same thing with spaghetti. We did buy a pound of coffee. But as times went on, we had to be very careful. Coffee we had to give up. And one thing in Victoria, most people are English, and you don't drink coffee. So there was no coffee smell in the house, which was a good thing. We had brought the Bible with us and a hymn book. And at night, Ellen would sing. And before we went out in the morning looking for a job, Ellen would open up the Bible and read something out of the Bible. Ellen said, "The best thing is that God knows we need a job. And through his mysterious ways, he will find us a job. And maybe to some other people." I said, "We don't know other people. Only the McPhersons, and if they knew we need a job, they would surely tell us." We have now been in Victoria for 2.5 months. We were very short of food. We owe 1 month in rent. And McPherson's, they're dear people. They were kind to us. They could have told us to leave, but they didn't. Ellen fixed Mrs. McPherson's hair once a week. And in the evening, we had no radio. So we sat behind those sheer curtains and looked out on the street. We saw the same people coming home at night for work. And there was special, a man across the street. He would go down to the corner store. We figured he was buying milk or cigarettes. He always came back with a bag. So those people, we called them for our unknown friends. We had again been out all day long looking for a job. And we were on our way home tired, hungry, and devastated. As we came into our street, the Burdett Street, a taxi drove up, and out stood a very distinguished looking man. "Hello," he said. "Are you not those two Danish girls that I took from the ferry over to Hotel Douglas and down here to Burdett Street?" "Yes," Ellen said. "You don't look very happy," he said. "No, we don't have work," Ellen said. "Well, there is a hotel out by the ocean, out the Pacific Ocean, called Oak Bay Beach Hotel. Would you girls be willing to take whatever work there is?" "Oh yes, we would. And there is also a beauty parlor down the street. And I have to take tourists up to the Oak Bay Beach Hotel tonight. And I know the owner, Mrs. McDonough, and I will ask her. And tomorrow I go down to the beauty parlor. And I will ask there. God does work in mysterious ways. Who would ever have thought the only person we really had contact with was that taxi driver? Thank God in heaven. So I got the job at Old Bay Beach Hotel and worked with a very nice little lady, Mrs. Palliser. She was 60 years old. She had to work because her husband had a stroke and was in a home in Vancouver. We worked very good together. Now, Ellen told me, when people ask you, do you speak English? You don't say no. You say a little. Was very little. But the thing is, if you say no, you close the door. When people start to talk to you, then you pick up a few words here and there. And yes, I spoke a little. And we also read the paper at home. Ellen would say, now read the paper for me. And I did. And she said, yeah, that's pretty good. She said, the only thing is, I'm the only one to understand what you're saying. There was, at the Oak Bay Beach Hotel, there was double rooms, there were single rooms, and there was a suite. When we came to the end of the day, I could see Mrs. Palliser was getting pretty tired. I haven't worked for so long time, I had a lot of go in me. So I said I could take and clean that last suite. In that suite was a little lady. She had a chauffeur with her. He came from Santa Ana in California. And she stopped me out in the hallway. Do you speak English? A little. She said, where do you come from? Denmark. I have been to Denmark, she said. Tomorrow, 4 o'clock, she pointed at her watch. Come in to my suite. I will order coffee and cake, tea and cake. I have some pictures that were taken in Denmark I'd like to show to you. So the next day I went into Mrs. Boot, was her name, suite. After I cleaned, I went back. And so she showed me her album. Was I ever surprised? There she sat at the Royal Palace in Malmborg together with the Queen and the King of Denmark. Her daughter was married to the King's cousin. She gave me $20 in tip. I walked pretty fast home that day. And I said, so Ellen, can we buy a pound of coffee? And Ellen said, no. We have to give McPherson that money. Do you need that money? And so in 2 weeks, we owe them again for another month. So we'll give them. So yeah, well, that was fine. I did that. And we had been working about 2 weeks, Ellen at the beauty parlor, and I at Oak Bay. I came home from work. Ellen was home. And it looked like Ellen had been crying, and she had cry in her voice. And then she came up with the most wild story I have ever heard. Would you like a cup of coffee, Edson? Yes. Well, you have to do something for that coffee. And what would that be? Well, she said, you know the man across the street we've been watching. You know who I think it is? No. Our brother had 25 or 30 years before had sent a picture of himself and this guy walking. He was both in the Navy, he was both in uniform, taken on the street in Copenhagen. You know, Ellen said, I think that man across the street is that man. Einar Nørgaard was his name. Thousands of miles from Denmark, and you think this man that walked on the street in Copenhagen with our brother is a man that live across the street? Yes. I said, where do the coffee come in? Well, of course, if he's Danish, he would ask us home for a cup of coffee. And if he's not that man, well, maybe he's married and being a good neighbor, he would say, come home and have a cup of coffee. So, when the man went down the street, we met him halfway, and as we came right up to the man, Ellen said, excuse me, sir, would your name be Einar Nørgaard? He stood still, and he said, yes, it is. He was not the most friendly Dane I ever met. And so Ellen told about we were Helge's sisters. And he said, well, I haven't had any contact with your brother all those years, he said, but when you write, you can say hello. And he said, goodbye. We did not get invited for coffee. When I came home the next day, Ellen said in a tear, I should say that this taxi driver, Haddon Johnson, who was a retired farmer from Manitoba, often when we came home, there was a little note on the door saying that I'm taking tours to Butcher's Garden. There's room for you too. So he took us to Butcher's Garden and picked us up with the other tourists a couple of hours later. He almost got us in for free. He said, I have some students with me. Well, we were old students. So we saw quite a bit of Victoria and wherever. He was a real gentleman and a very kind man. He sort of looked after us a bit. So as I came home, Ellen was sitting in a chair, and I could see she was very ill. It was just like when she was talking to me, she was sort of in and out. She showed me her foot that was so swollen, and her big toe looked terribly ill, terrible color. When Ellen was 15 years old, she had ingrown toenails and had the boat, her toenails on boat, her big toes removed in Copenhagen. Now one of those toenails, there was infection in it. Haddon Johnston came by and more or less told him that Ellen was ill, couldn't go any place. And he said, there is a doctor down here. He said, I take patients down to him. His name is Dr. Felix. He's a Dutch doctor. I'm going to drive down and see if he's open. He's open twice a week. So he came back and he said, the nurse said I should bring Ellen down. So we went down to the doctor, and the doctor said, "You have a very bad infection, and I will have to operate as soon as possible." Ellen told him that we did not have Medicare. He said, "If you have someone to take you or wait for you and take you home, you won't have, there won't be as much as if you have to stay at the hospital." So 6:30 in the morning, Mr. Johnston came, and we took Ellen to the doctor, to the hospital. And I went to work. And but when we were at the doctor's office, Dr. Felix said, he examined Ellen's other foot, and he said, "Where did you have this operation done on your foot before?" Ellen said, "At Finsen's Institute in Copenhagen, which was a research hospital." He said, "That's where I trained to be a doctor." And so when I came home from work, Ellen lay there in terrible, terrible pain, very, very ill. Dr. Felix had given her some medication, and those two dear old people, McPherson's, had helped Ellen to the bathroom and also given her some hot soup at noon. For the first week, Ellen just lay there very, very ill. And the second week, she was able to walk or stand a bit on her foot. And the third week, Helen Johnson came and picked Ellen up and took her to work on one shoe, on one foot, and a sock on the other foot. We were waiting for that bill to come, and then the bill came, $350. And so we had to go down and make arrangement how much we could pay a month. So Ellen said to the nurse, "Can we pay $50 a month?" It's not $350, she said. "It's $3.50. Dr. Felix said, "I'm going to give that Danish girl a break. I'll just charge her for what I use at the hospital." God does work in mysterious ways. And so we went out and got a bouquet of roses for that doctor. At least we could do that and thank him for actively saving Ellen's life. And so things were getting, they kept Ellen at the beauty parlor, because the guests at the hotel really liked Ellen as a beauty parlor. And when Mrs. Booth found out that that was my sister, she gave $10 a week to Ellen. So we could start to pay off the McPherson's. And one time that Mr. Johnston came, he said, "I hear there's some kind of a Danish festival outside Victoria. I can take you out there, and somebody probably can take you back here to Victoria." And so we did that, and we met two brothers, house builders, Ben and Ernie Jensen. Ernie took us home. Things was coming along pretty good in Victoria, and we start to feel so much better. And Ellen met to Ernie, a very nice Danish couple, and Ellen always carried a scissor and a comb in her purse, and she always cut people's hair and fixed hair. So those people said you would have to get a place closer to the hotel for the winter, because it rains a lot in Victoria in the winter time. So we found a nice little basement suite near the hotel and near the beauty parlor. 15th of September, I was called into Mrs. McDonald's office. That 1st of October, they wouldn't need me anymore. The season was finished. Ellen got the sound at the beauty parlor. What were we going to do? Staying in Victoria and pay $50 a month for that basement suite. We went down to the immigration and he said, the best place for you girls to go would be Calgary. So we left this beautiful Victoria about a few days after 1st of October, because we were gone, we planned to come back to Victoria, because they said we could have our job back in next year in April. And Mrs. Palliser said, when you come to Calgary, maybe you could stay at the Y, it would be a little cheaper. So then we came, took a taxi to the Y, and yes, we could rent two bunk beds for $1 each. So we did that, and the lady, she was not a very pleasant person, she said, is that your suitcases? Yes. We don't have room for suitcases, you can stay here. What is your name? Our name was Mickelson. There's a letter for you. That dear Mrs. Boot in Victoria had sent me a letter with $20 in it. The lady from the hotel. So we found another, phoned for a taxi, and we found another hotel, and we looked in the paper, and we looked for a place to stay. And there was a lady that rented out her little suite for, she was in a sanatorium for 6 months. And a nice place. And on the outside, there were wooden steps going out up to the second floor where we stayed at the back. So then we went down to unemployment. And the lady said, this is not a good time to come to Calgary. There is no work for you here. But you can come down every day and we'll post the jobs. So, got up early in the morning and went down to the unemployment. And after 2 weeks, there was listed a job as a tailor downtown. So Ellen and I went there. And the tailor hired me. Well, he actually was Ellen he thought he hired. It was $24 a week, paid once a month. And so he, when I came to work, he got pretty angry. He said, I didn't hire you. I hired the other girl. She speaks English, you don't, do you? I haven't said a word, really. A little. So there was a bundle of clothes laying on the sewing machine, and the tailor said, I'll show you how to put in a zipper. It must only take 12 minutes, no basting, no pins. It's a good way to put a zip in, and I did learn it. No one talked all day. Yeah, well, he did take a a catalog down from the shelf, and he said, tradespeople always bring their own tools. I don't see you have a scissor with you. No. Well, this is the scissor I'm going to order for you. It cost $24. At the end of that first week, I would have to owe him $2. And I don't know, but at that time, I just about had enough of it. And nobody talked. They were not very friendly. He was a fighting Protestant from Belfast Island. He absolutely hated Catholics. If I had been a Catholic, I certainly would not have got the job. It was getting close to 5 o'clock. I worked from 7:30 to 5:30 every day there at the tailor shop. It was come to about 5 o'clock, and I hear the tailor says, "Hello, John and Mrs. Johnson." There was a man and a wife and a lady standing in the door. It was a cold day, and the man had a fur coat on and a fur hat, and he held a bag beside him with some cloth hanging out. He kind of looked at me, and the tailor said, "Yeah, we got a new girl. I think they had lots of girls there. But where is it you say you come from?" The tailor said to me, "Denmark." The old man took the broom, and he danced around the floor and sang in Swedish. And a few minutes later, there was another man standing in the door. His name was Ernie. There was John's son. "Papa, what are you doing? There is a Danziger Flicker here. She understands what I'm saying, and we can talk together. I haven't been able to, in all the years I've been here, to speak my own language." Those two dear people became my dears and best friends. John and his brother came from Småland in Sweden, and he had come to New York, where John could not find a job. So he walked all the way up to Canada, to Alberta. He thought he could work on a farm. He became a janitor. He did not have much to do with. But every Saturday, I go to their place on 14th Street and had coffee. And John and I would speak Swedish. And John said, "Oh, Danske Flicker, you've got to see the ice cafe. We are going to take you there." And so him and Mrs. Johnson and Ernie took us there. John never had a car. And Ernie always said, "Remember, Mom, let Papa and Danske Flicker speak to each other." And she sat there very painfully. And my sister did mention a couple of times that my English was getting a little better, but now I spoke with a Swedish accent. We could not find a Lutheran church in Victoria. And as we came into Calgary that night, we saw the light. And Ellen said, "Maybe there will be a Lutheran church here." So Ellen got a good job at a beauty parlor just 3 blocks from where we lived. And she asked one of the customers, "Is there a Lutheran church in Calgary? I'll try to find out." So she came back and she said, "Yeah, there is a Sharon Lutheran church up on 10th Avenue. And where you live, you could take number 3 bus right up there." So Sunday came, and we took the bus up to Sion Lutheran Church. And a very friendly man stood outside, and he introduced himself as Chris Mickelson. That was our name too. So he said, "I come from a very strong intermission home, Gloomy Danes." Church was full of Gloomy Danes, and we were the Happy Danes. He said, Alan said, "We are going to Vienna." So he said, "Then you'll feel right at home here, because there is a Danish pastor who has been a pastor out at Alan for many years, and he's gone to Vienna." And we met him. He was so happy to see us. And there was three other immigrants at the church that day. So old Pastor Rasmussen invited us home, and he had a little sermon for us, and he said, "Let us sing Grundtvig's beautiful hymn, A Day Full of Grace." Well, there certainly was a day full of grace that we were accepted into that church, because it wasn't like that in Denmark. There was quite a difference between the Gloomy Danes and the Happy Danes. 18th of November, Ellen came home from work, and she said, "A lady came in today, and she said, there is a lutefisk supper at the Norwegian club, Sons of Norway. We'll go there. Maybe we can hear news about Aina, who we met on the boat." So we got ready, and actually we only had one piece of bread. "We can't eat there," Anna said, "because we had very little money, and we had to be very careful if we came back to Victoria in 6 months." And so we came in to the Norwegian club. A very friendly and funny lady greeted us. Ellen said, "We were from Denmark." "Oh, welcome, you danske jenter," sir, with them Danish girls. I will ask about Aina's brother Rolf. "Well, he isn't here tonight," he said, "but I have someone I want you to meet. He is a bachelor, and he has a car and a television set." "I'll go and get him." And so we waited for a long time, and Ellen said, "This is getting pretty embarrassing that all Norwegians have to meet us. Why?" So we start to put our coats back on again. The lady called, "Wait, wait, I danske jenter." And she brought this man with her. He was not an old man. He was nicely dressed, talked very nice. And he introduced himself as Gilbert Swenson. And we were invited home to his mother, and the mother and the grandfather and the sister was there for the supper. It was her birthday. And so we went there for coffee, and they were very nice people. And Gilbert said he was an Anglican, went to Anglican church. And we talked a little bit about Banff and that, and so he said he worked for an oil company, and he was in the reserve Air Force. And so he asked if we would like to go up to Banff in a couple of weeks. He would take us up there. So Ellen said to to me when we come home. We are going to be honest with people. We are not staying in Calgary. And so we eat and we pay for the lunch or for the gas going up there. And we went up there and Ellen said when we had lunch that we would be going back to Victoria again. The first part of December, there was a knock at our door. It was Ernie Jensen that came from Victoria. He had got a job in Calgary. That was the young that man we have met at the festival out there, though. And I think he liked Ellen already at that time. And so there was a Pastor Peterson up at Sion Lutheran Church. Very good preacher and a very outgoing man. And he would invite us immigrants sometime for supper. He was a good cook. And Ellen, of course, always had her scissors and her comb in her purse, so she cuts everybody's hair, fix up Mrs. Peterson's hair. And Mrs. Peterson got off from the chair, and Ellen said, "Next." And Pastor Peterson sat down. "Yeah, you can cut my hair," he said. Those days, no ladies cut men's hair. He went to a barber shop. But Pastor Peterson, he was willing. So we became very friends with them. But so we were getting to Christmas, near Christmas. I said to Ellen, "It would be nice if we can go to Sion Lutheran Church at 4 o'clock on a Christmas Eve." So I said to the tailor, "When do we close Christmas Eve?" "That is our busiest evening," he said. "We have, there's a shop downstairs. If by things, we'll have to fix them. So we close 6:30. I had, in all the time, in all my life, been to church on a Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve in Scandinavia is the biggest festive evening for the year. And when I came to work on Christmas Eve day, there was this bundle of clothes laying there as always, and on top was a beautiful parcel all wrapped to Danske Flicker for John, from John and Mrs. Johnson. When I went home, I just felt I couldn't go on much longer. So, close by home, I stopped. And I just let my tears fall wherever they want to fall. I couldn't take it. As I got closer, I saw there was light up in our apartment. And for some reason, I could smell old goose and red cabbage. And I had to get myself together. And I don't want to be ungrateful to Ellen because I know I can't make it in Canada. My English was poor. And I would go back to Victoria, trying to make money and go home. I didn't fit in here. And as I went up the steps, the door opened. Here was Ernie Jensen. He said, "Merry Christmas, Elsa. I went over to the shop where your sister worked. I got the key. I cooked you and your sister a goose dinner." Here was a roasted goose filled with apples and prunes and red cabbage and everything. He had set the table nice and had a candle on the table. We sit down and we sing the table prayer. and then the thank you prayer. And then Ellen took the Bible out and read the gospel from Luke. And it happened in those days when a decree was sent out from the emperor, Augustus, that all should be registered. I hear that message so many times before. And here, 1,000 miles at home, I hear the same message. The message was the same, the gift of the Christ child was the same. And I felt this very warm filling me, and I felt Christmas in my heart. Pastor Peterson left Sharon Lutheran in the new year, and he asked Ernie Jensen if he would be interested in staying at the pastor's house for open up the church, and then cut the grass when there was time for. So we decided to stay in Calgary for that time. And then Gilbert Swenson sometime came down to meet me outside the door, and we went for a walk. I only took 45 minutes lunch, so I had time with John and Mrs. Johnson before I went home. Second off, we had then to move because the lady come back to this place we rented. And we then moved to other place, over to 15th Avenue, right across from Grace Presbyterian Church. And 2nd of October, 1955, my sister Ellen married Ernie Jensen in Sharon Lutheran Church, and 2 days later went back to Victoria. I stayed. I had then one of the immigrant girls rented the room that we rented, or the little apartment we rented. And so I had now been at the tailor shop 2 years. And John's son Ernie gave John a trip to New York to visit his brother. And of course, when he came back from that trip, oh, he had so much to tell me about how he could speak Swedish and had this wonderful time together. And so, 2 months after John came back from New York, his son Ernie came to the tailor shop and told us that John had taken ill. He was in the hospital, and John died 2 days later. The tailor said, "Here we don't go to funerals." I said, "Yes, I do." And I went to the funeral, and there John was laying in an open coffin. I thank God in heaven for John's life and for John, what he has been for me. When I came back to the tailor shop, tailor said, "Why are you crying? John was just an old man." No, John was a very special man that make such a difference in other people's life, and he has certainly made a big difference in my life. 2 weeks later, I felt I couldn't stay at the tailor shop because I missed them so much. So I gave my notice. I had then gotten $28 a week. And so I left after the time, and I did not have another job to go to. I closed the door right quiet. My father told us kids when we were small, when you leave a job, you never bang the door as you go out. That banging door can follow you. I closed the door very careful. Said goodbye. And I got a job up in Lake Louise from 1st of April to 1st of October. On October the 20th, 1956, Gilbert Swenson and I got married in Sion Lutheran Church. And in Canada's 100 years, I became a Canadian citizen. It is an honor and a privilege to be part of this beautiful, big, and peaceful country. I have received so much love and kindness, also from Lutheran Church of the Cross. Without that love and kindness, I would not have made it. Thank you. Was that too long?
Was I too long? No. Well,
yes.
No. Well, no. You're right on time. We have 2 minutes. So with these 2 minutes, I'm going to ask you to turn to the people around you and engage in the question, where did you hear God at work in Elsa's life? And at the end of 2 minutes, we'll just have a little bit of sharing, and then we'll pray and go. Where did you hear God at work in Elsa's life?